This is Radio 4, now Saturday Night Theatre.
In the early 18th century, an Eskimo was discovered drifting in his kayak off the northeast coast of Scotland. No one knows how he came to be there, and he died a few days later from a common cold. But what if he'd survived? The play that follows is based upon this supposition.
Chico! Chico! I've found food! A fish! For you and the boy! Answer me! Answer me!
Oh, you foolish man. Why didn't you splash the igloo's roof with blood?
Oh, you foolish man, a Moroccan, to ask so foolish a question.
There is no blood. Even the last dog sucked dry.
Sika! Sika!
We present Amarok by Peter Francis Brown, with Ian Cuthbertson as Fraser, Juliet Prue as Margot, David Bannerman as Henry, and Bill Wallace as Amarok.
Amarok, at last. I dreamed you were lost forever in the snow.
Don't I always sniff my way back?
Unless you smell a West Side girl.
There are no girls, Siko. Who's got the plumpest body? The smallest nose? The roundest breast?
No more. My belly's flat as a drum skin, and my breasts have shriveled into two dried fish.
Look, I've found food to fatten you.
My great hunter offers me a minnow.
See, I left the eyes for you and took tow to suck.
Two pebbles would do as well.
Is he sleeping?
I've no longer any heat to offer him between my legs. He will not wake.
But he must. He's my son. I'll hunt terrible when I'm too weak to give chase. He'll call his first son Amarok after me.
And I tell you, he will not wake.
He must. He is my life. I drowned his sister to safeguard him.
It's not your fault there are no gulls. You're not to blame because the air is filled with snowflakes instead of wings.
Listen to me, Siko. I take this fish and offer it to the great sea spirit. Perhaps she will look kindly on our sacrifice and provide me with seal.
You can't go out into the bay. The wind will blow you beyond the bird cliff.
Sedna will protect me. You see, then I come back with enough blood to turn your stools black and a huge liver to sink your teeth into.
Enough! Shall I pull back the fur for you to see little Tugto's face?
No. No. I see him when I return.
Block the entrance with snow when you go.
Why?
To keep our scent inside, of course.
No bear would dare to visit Amarok's igloo.
Do it.
Only to please you.
Remember me. Remember little Tokto.
Sleep, Siko. And I will wake you both with blood.
Touch the starboard, Mr. Croker.
It'll bring us into Inverness not a minute sooner.
Do as I command.
Aye, aye, sir.
Oh, I've never seen a sea so still. It's as if a spell had been cast upon it.
Which it has.
Meaning?
Look no further than your cabin, Captain.
Mistress Margot. A witch.
Oh, never mind witch. Woman's enough to kill a winter, as well you know. Especially when we hear Sapphire in a temper to match.
And what would you have me do, Mr. Croker? Throw Aronald's daughter overboard as a sop to your superstition? No, Mr. Croker. It is God who provides food for ourselves, not womankind who withholds it.
Then you won't object if I whistle up a wind?
Not on my vessel.
Not even if I knock a nail into the foremast to pacify the sea devils?
No, I say.
Now who's falling prey to superstitions?
What was that, Croker?
Oh, nothing, sir.
Thursday, the 22nd of May, 1700. Now what? Nothing's occurred that won't waste ink. Even the captain's dour company. At supper he sits as stiff and as silent as a knife. How can a man who sailed to Africa and the Indies be so full of emptiness? Had I visited such places, I'd be brimming with more words than a Kirk preacher at Christmas. And where have you visited in all your 18 years, Margot Fraser? Well, I have been to Shetland to see a suitor. And was he suitable? Oh, he's rich enough. But his breath reeks worse than the cattle on this unhappy ship. 24 years of age, and only 2 yellow spikes left between his lips. Imagine having to kiss him. Oh, imagine. And the crew. Anyone would think I was to blame for the stifling heat and the death of a breeze. Don't they know how much I desire to embrace my beloved father? Don't they realize I'd sell my soul for a fresh north wind to speed me home?
Siko, how can a bird cast its shadow across me so close to the world's edge? How can any beast survive beneath this blistering sun? How can the sea not become steam? And where are the great stone pillars holding up the sky? Am I already dead?
Pass me the spyglass, Mr. Croker.
The launcher.
Something adrift.
A boat, sir.
I cannot see for the haze. A log, perhaps.
Where are you, Siko? And Tuktu? Already the flesh of fox or bear.
So my husband.
Then why do you and Tuktu dance?
Because you drum. Because it's cold.
I feel no chill.
Because you're wrapped in fur and skins.
Why are you naked?
Because we'll perish quicker and feel less pain.
But look, woman, there, where the waves break, 100 seals, enough to feed and clothe you for many winters.
Too late, Emerald. Too late.
Forgive me for not finding meat.
You are not to blame. You're not to blame.
It's a man. At least I take it to be so. Here, Croker, lend me your thoughts.
Not a man, I think.
What alternative is there?
A sulky, sir.
You see a mane and tail?
No. It has a beard like a fool's brick and a body bristling with fur.
Then furl the sails, Mr. Croker, and lower the skiff.
Is it wise?
Do as I say.
be dead. For death means the end of all dreams, and I dream an island. A floating island with the skins of great beasts drying in the sun.
What's the matter, Mr. McGill?
I must ask you to return to your cabin, Mistress Fraser.
Are we in danger?
Nothing so drastic, I can assure you.
Then why must I return to my dungeon?
Because I am master of this vessel and order you to do so.
That's merely a statement, Mr. McGill, not a reason. Besides, it is my father's ship. So I'll ask again. Weigh the commotion.
We spied a... some manner of creature floating to windward.
Oh, do be more precise.
Half man, half beast by the look of him.
It sounds a rum sighting to me.
I tolerate no intoxicating liquor on my vessel.
Naturally, Mr. McGill. I was simply angling for a sensible explanation of so blatant an illusion.
Mm.
Or are there more things in heaven and sea than I dreamt of in my philosophy?
There are things existing in the oceans that even Lord God himself has no recollection of having created. Now go below.
On one condition. That if he be not a merman or a hooved devil, you will convey him to my cabin.
And where will you go?
To your quarters, of course.
And I? Where shall I sleep?
It is your command, Mr. McGill. You must decide.
Ah, there you are, Mistress Cotterill. At long last.
How can I be of service, Mr. Fraser?
More peat for the fire, if you please.
Oh, but it's already hotter than a baker's dozen.
Baker's dozen?
I mean oven, sir.
I wish it so in case my daughter returns.
If that's not likely, sir. There's not enough air to flow. Slow down. Look out the window. Every boat's knotted fast to the quay. There's been no fresh fish for days.
McGill should have put in a week ago.
Don't fret yourself. He's the finest master in your fleet.
It's not her safety that concerns me, but her company I crave. I should never have exiled her to her cousin.
But I thought it was marriage you had in mind.
Indeed I did, but her letters have persuaded me of its impossibility.
Oh, she must be sorely disappointed.
On the contrary, I'm delighted they're so ill-matched.
A sentiment Mr. Henry Muir will no doubt echo.
Mr. Muir's ambitions are none of your affair, woman. Now off you trot and pack my bags.
Sir?
My business in Inverness is concluded.
Oh, couldn't you spare a few more days, sir? Mistress Margot's heart will ache at your absence.
I wish I could. But Mr. Muir informs me that there are difficulties at the estate. The Mackies have been raiding my livestock again.
I don't know why you don't have them all hanged, sir.
The entire clan?
The wolves will be no poorer.
They steal because their children are dying of starvation.
Don't you already give them grain from your own store?
There's famine in the land, as well you know.
Oh, you're too soft-hearted, sir.
I'd rather be accused of leniency than have a single bairn's blood stain my dreams.
You are a true Christian, sir.
No, Mistress Cotterill. I am a true philosopher.
Oh, you're too clever for me, sir.
Which is precisely why religion triumphs. It leeches onto ignorance such as yours. Forgive me. I've already spoken more than sufficient to damn me in the minds of the Kirk. Now off you go, and mind you don't repeat what I've just said.
As you wish, sir.
Where are you, Margot? Why is your ship not silhouetted upon that bleak horizon? Why do you leave me so alone?
Is he still alive?
Not quite a corpse, sir.
Nevertheless, it's our Christian duty to remove his clothes and bathe him.
Look, sir, a feather vest. Perhaps he flew to us.
I've heard tales of tribes in the frozen wastes beyond Iceland. Oh, such a perilous voyage is unthinkable in so frail a craft.
God help him. It's a wonder his ribs haven't split his skin.
I was fatigued by a surfeit of sleep and dearly wished to set down the day's extraordinary events. However, having quitted my cabin, now occupied by the stranger, and having left this journal within, I was presented with the alternatives of retrieving it or returning to a squalid berth in which to spend the night in the sole company of John Knox's History of the Reformation in Scotland. Naturally, I chose the former. A feeble lantern flame emitted sufficient light for me to see that the sailor on guard had been required to make up a full complement on deck. Thus, I found myself alone with a stranger, whose body rose and fell beneath a blue plaid blanket. I tiptoed towards the shelf where my journal lay, but tripped in my haste and brushed against a decanter which fell to the floor. He awoke and stared at me. His eyes slitted like the wolf I had seen glaring at me one gloaming beside the Ness. But then he smiled and raised a cupped hand to his swollen mouth in a gesture indicating thirst. My first impulse was to flee, but there was such supplication in his expression that I filled a pewter mug with water and held it to his lips. He drank it all and asked, through mine, for more. I obliged, holding his head erect. Enough. More will only make you wretch. I eased his head back onto the pillow and found, to my surprise, that his hair, though appearing coarse, was as smooth as silk. He smiled again, like a child, and drew in his knees, causing the blanket to fall, revealing himself to be naked.
Where is the wretched woman?
If I know Mrs. Cotterill, she'll likely be more pickled than a herring.
Oh, why, Mrs. Marvel? Oh, you've taken me entirely out of the way.
So I see. Although it's a wonder you didn't recognize our vessel docking beneath your window.
Oh, I was a bed with the couch, Mistress.
With a pint of gin at your elbow by the breath of you.
Croker, may carry my impedimenta to my room. Mistress, he's not properly here. Best use your father's.
He's not here.
He left for Dinmore Lodge yesterday on some urgent business.
Crooker, you'll arrange a messenger to inform my father of my arrival after you've taken my luggage upstairs.
Doubtless you'll be weary of ship's cooking, Mistress.
Cooking's too generous a word, Mistress Cotter. I seem to have eaten nothing but potatoes stricken with symptoms of the Black Death.
Oh, then you must allow me to prepare you something succulent. There's a fine lay of cold mutton.
I'll carve it for myself later, for in your present condition it would likely be served up with a severed thumb for a side dish.
Oh.
I was glad that Mr. Scotterill had neglected to tidy my father's room, for I found his favourite blackthorn pipe beside the hearth, and by lifting it to my nose, I could conjure up every feature of that gentle face I missed so sorely for 2 drear months. He had picked a posy of thrifts and pink sea bindweeds to place before the miniature of my mother, whose immutable painted face now constitutes my sole memory of her existence. And as I watched her, as in a mirror, a petal fell to the floor, stabbing me with the remembrance of the wild roses my distraught father had scattered on her coffin.
Oh, my God! I'm bleeding! Mistress Cotterill! Mistress Cotterill! Come to me, help me!
What is the matter, child?
See, my petticoats, they're stained with blood. I'm wounded from within.
From within?
You must fetch a physician.
Well, surely it's Cynthia's time,
my
Mistress.
My time?
Hasn't this occurred before?
Never.
Never? And you already passed
18. Oh, do stop your prattling and find me a physician.
Oh, I suppose with no mother to explain.
Why do you remain while I'm in danger?
It's merely the moon blood, mistress. You've become a woman at last, that's all. So set your mind at rest and sit yourself down while I go and fetch fresh linen. Then I'll tell you all about the bloody cross we women have had to bear ever since that trollop Eve gave her apples to Adam.
Where can I be, Sicko? Has the floating island been blown ashore?
It has, my husband.
The beach is all polished stones, as alike as goose flesh. What are those lights in the cliff?
Lamps burning in 100 caves.
But there are no men, and the entrances are sealed by ice. And look, smoke rising from piles of rocks on the cliff top. I'm afraid. Tell me, Sicko, is this the great sea spirit summoning me down into her depths?
No, my husband.
Surely it was her who gave me water for my final journey. Her with her red hair like seaweed swirling in a pool.
Perhaps you're dreaming.
That can't be, for my throat is choked with pain.
And there. There is your kayak, as solid as bones, with your harpoon beside it in the moonlight.
I'm too hot. Even though I'm naked, although my belly's like snow from lack of food.
Then you must go and hunt. For in such heat, there must be many fat seals sleeping on the shore.
Don't leave me.
I must. I must.
What did you think of the black cock, Henry?
Mrs. Breen must be the finest cook north of Loch Ness.
Loch Lomond, surely.
I'll not quibble, sir.
A lawyer not quibble? You surprise me, Henry.
I've always deemed one glass tempered with water to be adequate.
Indeed. And now to less trivial matters. What are we to do about the Mackey's incessant theft of my sheep?
Well, I advise burning their hovels to the ground.
With the connivance of the soldiery?
Well, naturally, it would require the magistrate's complicity.
And to what purpose?
Why, sir, to deprive the Mackeys of a sustenance.
Then what will they eat?
Each other, if it pleases them. After all, it's not unknown in the remoter glens.
I have an alternative proposal, Henry.
Sir?
Let us provide them with a score of ewes and a tap as a gift.
For an instant, I thought you serious, sir.
Do you read a jest in my countenance?
But to what purpose?
I would have thought it obvious. If I give them livestock, then they will no longer have cause to steal.
I must strongly advise against such rashness.
That is the difference between you and I, Henry. Whereas you see merely a red debit in our accounts, I see children whose bellies are no longer swollen from a diet of grass and green blaberries.
You're resolute in this matter?
Indeed I am, Henry. You will arrange it.
They'll take advantage of you, sir.
And why not? Do I not have advantages to spare?
Enter.
Yes, Roberts, what is it?
It's Mistress Margot, sir.
What bad news.
Oh, on the contrary, sir. She arrived safely on the evening tide.
Oh, splendid, splendid. Ask Mrs. Breen to give the messenger meat and ready my horse. I'll ride back with him. And you, Henry, can accompany us.
But it's past midnight, sir. The roads are rife with danger.
Shall I saddle Mr. Muir's horse, sir?
I'm sure Mr. Muir is almost as anxious to see Margot as I. Well, Henry?
Indeed I am.
My Margot, back safe and sound. Quickly, Roberts, perform your task quickly, so I'll be with my beloved girl before the rising of the sun.
Oh, he's there.
It's me, Mistress.
Mrs. Cotterill on board ship.
I beg you to let me in.
Men enter. Oh, please forgive me, but I was having the strangest, most wicked dream.
Mr. Croker's downstairs.
At this hour?
He thought you ought to know, Mistress, you being a fizzer.
Know what?
Is that stowaway, whatever? He's been shot.
Now calm yourself, Mistress Cotterill. Put your thoughts in order.
Didn't she pull some savage from the sea?
And he's been shot? By who?
Well, one of the redcoat bastards.
But why?
According to Mr. Croker, he was found fully naked outside the Blue Anchor. And when the sergeant challenged him, he lifted his spear as if to throw it.
Is he dead?
Oh, Lord, no, mistress. The sergeant was 2 quarts full and only sliced off an ear.
And where's the poor man now?
Dragged off to the garrison, by all accounts.
Although we must intervene. Quickly, help me dress.
In your condition, mistress, we can't wait till morning.
We must protect him from the English.
Who exactly is this man who drags you from your bed?
Oh, I know little more about him than you, Mistress Cottrell, other than my impression that he is most extraordinary.
Set the food down yonder, beside our guest, Roberts.
Forgive me for speaking plainly, sir, but I'm loath to leave you alone and unprotected in the company of such an unpredictable creature.
Indeed? And do you believe him to be a cannibal who'll leap from my bed and devour me in preference to Mrs. Breen's fine broth? He's a man like any other.
Like any other?
Such solicitude befits you, old friend, but were I a stranger in this house, I might take you for a brigand.
Sir?
Is there not a pistol tucked in your plaid?
It's my duty to protect you.
You will divest yourself of the firearm forthwith, for I'll not permit Margot to use it as a wand with which to conjure up threats that exist solely in your imagination. Now leave us. Wake up, my rare and inexplicable visitor. Here, I offer food. Food. His eyes beneath his bandage opened and were flooded by fear. Like a stag at bay, his brown irises flitted about the room, and I wonder precisely what he perceived when he saw the peacock tapestry and the four-poster embellished with carved anemones. Food. Food. He sniffed the air and smelled meat. Foolishly, I handed him the spoon, but he grasped the bowl and poured its contents down his throat, dribbling broth onto my best Dutch coverlet. When he had licked the bowl clean, he held it to his nose and sniffed again, this time with a garland of primroses surrounding it. Then, without warning, he leapt from the bed and gazed through the window before falling to his knees as though terrified by the tree whose branches almost brushed the panes. Like a madman, he scratched the glass. But I was on the point of calling for Robert's assistance when he suddenly became perfectly still. There, dressed in a damask gown, was Margot. A wicker-work basket in her hands, gliding between the topiary towards the flower garden. His face was lit by recognition, and he turned, smiling. Margot, I said.
Margot.
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 Margot. Margot. Margot!
I pointed to myself and said, Alistair. He frowned, then jabbed my chest and said,
Alistair?
Yes, Alistair. Alistair? Margot.
Alistair? Margot. Alistair? Margot.
I mirrored his gesture by prodding his chest. And you?
Amarok.
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 Amarok. Alistair. Margot.
Amarok. Alistair. Margot. Amarok. Alistair. Margot. Amarok. Alistair.
Margot. One more columbine will suffice, I think. Oh,
it's only me.
Oh, Henry, why must you always sneak up on me like a footpad? Well, see how you've maybe slipped my dress with the scissors.
Well, you're unwise to choose so fine a garment for so menial a task.
And where else should I wear it? To the kirk, perhaps? Or have you arrived with an invitation to a grand Edinburgh ball? But you would not do so, Henry, would you? Even though Edinburgh were only a league distant instead of the far side of the world.
It's true that I don't approve of promiscuous dancing.
Sometimes I wonder why you risk your immortal soul by visiting this house of iniquity.
I am your father's attorney.
And is your function your sole motive for being here?
Have I not sought out your company?
Then you must make yourself useful by cutting me some foxgloves. I'm preparing a nosegay for our guest.
Most seriously concerned by your father's extraordinary behavior in the matter of this native sojourn in your residence.
Why must you always speak as if you're prosecuting before a judge and jury? Look about you, Henry. It's a rare and wondrous day full of perfume and birdsong. And not a witness in sight.
It's no laughing matter.
Oh, what dreary company you are, Henry. Like a harbinger of doom, dogging my shadow.
Why convey him here? He's not your father's responsibility.
It was my father's ship that saved him.
Doubtless the man's a heathen. And it's not fitting that an idolater should be given sanctuary beneath a Presbyterian roof.
Aren't all men worthy of God's solicitude, Henry? Aren't they all created in his likeness?
Hold a mirror up to most men and you'll find the devil's reflection.
Oh, poor Henry. Like all lawyers, you've grown accustomed to seeing only the worst in people.
It's you who speaks because your father's words are here.
I could wish for no finer tutor. Besides, who else in this godforsaken swamp could provide me with opinions?
The cook?
Oh, those incurious old quads. They build dogmas around themselves like prison walls to keep the outside world at bay.
Your pride will damn you, Margot Fraser.
I'd rather be damned for inquiring after the truth and spend eternity in perpetual complacency.
This is intolerable.
No, Henry. It is you who are intolerant.
You'll not speak to me so boldly when we're wed.
Wed? You and I? I think I'd rather wed a wild stranger than a man whose heart is so encrusted with ice.
You confuse cold-heartedness with a cold flame of righteousness.
I confuse nothing. I will go further. You are a cruel man, Henry.
What have I done to deserve such venom?
Did you not have that poor simpleton John Mackey shamed in the stocks for playing his violin on the Sabbath?
The evidence was irrefutable.
Then the law is composed by cloth-eared fools.
Our law is God's will woven into the fabric of our morality.
And was it God's will that you try Mary Murdoch for witchcraft?
There is an epidemic in our midst.
Oh, do you really believe she changed herself into a wild cat and destroyed her neighbor's hen?
She was found guilty by 15 honest men. There's no blood in my hand.
I'm told you wouldn't even allow her the customary clemency of strangulation before she was consumed to the fire.
An example was required.
They say the day was so raw that the mob held out their hands to the flames for warmth.
You'd be an artful adversary in court.
You need have little fear on that account. Men will doubtless learn to fly before a woman is called to the bar. Now be off with you, Henny, for I'm already weary with your company. Give me back the scissors.
But the foxgloves?
You've no need of scissors, Henry. You could cut them with your tongue. Listen.
To what?
The skylark. No doubt you prosecute that bird for singing on the Sabbath.
Look, Father. I've brought flowers for our guest.
Father? My father's chair is empty, and I was about to depart when I heard...
Margot.
I was so astonished I almost dropped the vase.
Margot.
My father had covered our guest's head with a nightcap, and this, coupled with the salt sores around his mouth, lent him the appearance of a crone. But his voice was so brimming with tenderness that I found myself advancing towards him with my bouquet outstretched.
See, I've brought you these blooms.
He grasped the flowers and buried his face in them as a child might.
Look, Tonto! There! Between the rocks. I've found you a star flower now, bigger than your fingernails. Tonto! Tonto!
Let's go!
Why are you weeping?
Marco. Marco.
Then he seemed to smile, and he pointed to the window where he had breathed a canvas of breath on each pane. As I moved towards the light, I perceived an entire gallery of female figures of the latest kind imaginable. And when I turned to him, foolishly thinking to admonish him, he pointed at the obscenities and said,
Marco.
Meaning, unmistakably, that it was I who was depicted there. Taking the curtain's hem, I raised all evidence of his abominations before fleeing in search of my father, in whom I had every intention of confiding. But when I found him, sitting silent in the library amongst his beloved books, my courage failed, and I crept away with my secret enfolded in my breast.
In my capacity as your legal and business advisor, I must entreat you to devote more time to your affairs and less to this new pet.
Pet, sir?
He's been occupying you for more than a month, sir. Listen to the gale beating on the windows. The crops will fail again this year.
Are my affairs not sound, Henry?
Sufficiently for the present. But if confidence in your repute declines, then it'll be debtors rather than rain battering on your door. And for what? That creature.
That creature's in possession of a ready intelligence, Henry. Converse daily, albeit with some difficulty still.
I cannot comprehend why you find him so beguiling.
Because I find humankind beguiling.
But he's without education.
And consequently, his mind's not yet cluttered with all the flotsam of our civilization. Although he assures me he can kill a whale single-handed and build a house from snow. In truth, it's him who is educating me.
To kill whales and build houses out of snow?
To see the world afresh, Henry.
And how will you dispose of him when your curiosity wanes?
Dispose of him? You speak of him as though he were a decrepit dog.
Who might yet bear his teeth.
Nonsense, Henry. He'll remain here, provided the authorities don't object.
In perpetuity?
That'll be for him to decide. No, Amarok, no. You must swing the club like this and hit the feather towards the flag.
Why, Alistair?
Why? For amusement.
It is difficult, Alistair.
If it were easy, we wouldn't bother to do it. Now try again. Oh, much better, much better. I'll make a grand golfer of you yet.
July the 9th. After weeks swathed in mist, we awoke to a rare blue day, and I propose to Margot that we arrange a picnic in the French manner beside the loch.
Do tell us more, Father.
Where was I?
In the splendid gardens of the Comte de Savenay.
Indeed I was. And there was the Comtesse, full to the brim with burgundy, standing in the river up to her waist without a gown, with her hoops spread all round her like a lobster pot.
How did she lose a gown?
Why, she took it off, of course.
Oh, imagine such a revel occurring on the banks of the River Ness, Henry.
Such popish licentiousness would not be tolerated in the Highlands.
More wine, Henry.
Intoxication is no substitute for logical debate. It alters propriety not one jot.
Poor Henry, you're sounding more like a Kirk Elder with the passing of each day.
Let us employ your Amarok as a gauge by which to measure proper behavior.
Must we?
Do you seriously believe that you can civilize this person by setting him in such surroundings?
In truth, he's experiencing some difficulty with our cutlery.
I've read that in China, they eat by means of small sticks. And were Henry to find himself shipwrecked there, God forbid, then I would dearly wish to watch him tackling a shoulder of venison with such implements.
Well, as I've no desire to venture to such pagan shores, it's unlikely that I'll be put to such a trial.
Suspect that for Henry the world is a place devoid of wonderment. Even our countryside fills him with foreboding. Every thicket conceals a robber, and behind every boulder there lurks a Jacobite waiting to pounce.
Amelie, say to God, preserve us, an apparition.
Amarok! Welcome!
I remember those clothes, Father. You wore them last when I was little.
He only requires a periwig to complete the illusion of good breeding.
Well, I think he looks splendid, like a pirate or a brigand.
Are those rags the best you could find, Roberts?
I deem them adequate, sir.
You're right, Margot. He does look splendid. Odd, admittedly, but splendid. Amarok, let me introduce you to Henry. Henry.
Good morning, Henry.
Unbolt your door, Henry. He has offered you his hand.
Good morning.
Good morning, Amarok.
Good morning, Amarok.
Delighted to meet you. Good morning, Margot. Good morning, Alastair. The sun, Alastair, hot like soup.
His own language is polysynthetic, Henry, so he has the greatest difficulty with our adjectives. Everything must be expressed in similes. Come, Amarok, my friend. I have a great surprise in store for you. Come, everyone. You must hurry ahead, Roberts, and prepare our revelation.
Oh, do tell us, Papa. All I see is Robert skulking behind that log.
All right, Robert. You may reveal all.
Look, Amarok. It's your boat.
My kayak. It is my kayak.
Tukto. Tukto. Are you hiding in the kayak?
Quick. A bear's coming. Big as a cloud. White as spindrift. Swifter than the diving birds.
Come with me, little Tukto. We'll roar like a whole family of bears outside the igloo and make Zico scream like a wounded seal. Hey! Tukto. Aren't you in there? Have you gone forever?
Look, Father. There are tears on his cheeks.
Row your boat for us, Amarok.
Oh, yes, Amarok. Do show us.
I cannot.
For me, Amarok. Please.
For you, Margot, yes. For Alastair, yes. For Henry... No, why not for me? Because your eyes are like flesh.
See how little it draws. It surely floated in a puddle.
He's capsized.
Yes.
Oh, quickly, Henry, you must do something.
What?
Wait, you're unsafe, of course.
Let Robert assist him. In truth, I cannot swim,
sir. For pity's sake, Henry, or he'll drown.
I cannot.
Then I will.
Your gown will drag you down. Henry, it must be you.
Didn't I warn you he'd bring ill luck?
Faster, Henry. There's still no sight of him.
Oh, he'll not be in time.
Look, Amarok's righted himself.
He's waving.
And grinning, if I'm not mistaken.
Henry, you can return. Our Amarok is safe.
See how fast he paddles away, like a porpoise. Promise me you won't consent if Henry proposes marriage.
Henry, marry my precious daughter. I'd rather lose everything and become a beggar than give you to such a dullard.
Roberts! Don't stand there like a statue! Help me from the water!
Aye, sir.
Poor Henry! Now his buckles will rust and his breeches shrink.
Did you see what he did, sir?
We have eyes, Henry!
But how? It was unnatural!
At least Henry's feet will smell sweeter for their soaking.
She'll hear you.
Oh, I wish your mother could be here to see you.
Are we an unusual pair, Papa?
In what way?
Father and daughter, such friends. I know of no others.
You're so like her.
How?
Beauty, grace, inquisitiveness, your smile. Allow me to kiss your hand.
Father?
Come, let's sit together and talk while we await Amarok's return.
He's already passed out of sight behind the island.
Perhaps he's trying to row home.
Would they could.
Then
Sorry. You startled me, as is your habit.
It's your Amarok who startled me.
You'd be wise to return to the lodge and change your clothes.
And leave you with that trickster.
Robert.
Aye, sir.
Fetch us brandy.
I don't drink brandy.
I know, but seeing you dripping like a freshly caught haddock's chilled me to the very bones.
Margot and I sat in the sunlight, sipping cognac, while Henry, shivering, paced the shore as though awaiting a verdict. Amarok did not return for almost an hour, and as he approached our cove, I perceived some bulky object balanced on the prow of his almost submerged craft. Amarok leapt from the combing, grabbed the bundle, and sped towards us, his expression set in a triumphant whoop of a grin.
I believe he's offering you a gift, Margot, although its source is a mystery to me.
I suggest you decline.
That would be childish.
Food, Margot. Food.
As Margot accepted his gift, the coat fell away, revealing a blood-flecked swan, whose neck uncoiled like a snake, its orange bill raking the stones like a pendulum.
Oh, hold me, Father, for a few things.
How dare he?
Food for Margot, for Alistair.
Didn't I warn you he should be in the possession of the authorities? And what's this around his throat? You're all my witnesses.
To what, Henry?
These talismans, sir. Carved in the likeness of devils.
Look closely, Henry. Observe the intricacy, the fine attention to detail.
The mere whittlings of a savage.
No, sir. Whatever these are, they are not the work of a savage.
At least permit me to escort Margot back to the lodge.
I've quite recovered, Father. It wasn't the swan, but his method of delivery that so astonished me. He simply didn't understand. He thought it would please me.
Please you? May I request, sir, that when I return to Inverness, I speak to the magistrate and arrange to have this creature confined.
Enough of your ranting, Henry. Take up the swan, Roberts. Tonight we'll feast like kings on the fruits of this man's extraordinary skill.
Then you must forgive me for not sharing your table. I've urgent business in Inverness.
My business?
My own, sir. Beware, Margot. For as surely as Christ is the Son of God, this sorcerer will do your household mischief.
I've been too good, Dick.
I'll warrant he's plotting something.
Enough of petty intrigue. We're neglecting our guest. Thank you, Amarok. Good food, good meat. Alistair, Margot, Amarok, eat.
Good food. Alistair, Margot, Amarok, eat.
While he spoke, a peacock butterfly alighted on Margot's sleeve. For some moments he stared at it, exhibiting a child's wonderment, and said,
beautiful, Margot. Beautiful.
I smell swan on the breeze.
It's as well Henry's absent, or we'd both be reported to the kirk and spend next Sabbath squatting on the penitent's stool.
Poor Henry's educated in every subject barring mankind.
Perhaps that's Amarok's way of commenting on my musical incompetence.
I shouldn't have offered him brandy.
Brandy, Alistair. Brandy, yes, yes.
No more brandy. More music instead. You like Margot's music?
Like Margot. Like Margot.
No, Amarok. You like the music.
Like birds.
Ah, right. Birds.
Like birds dying in a bird town.
You people have no music?
Sico has music.
Who?
Sico. Sico. Sico! Blow, Sico. Blow. Your lungs are stronger than Luna's. Your cheeks plumper. Blow like a whale. Blow her away.
Oh. It seems I've done it.
time my ending well to coincide with his oblivion.
I'll have Robert carry him to the attic.
Look at him, Papa. What are we to do with him?
Truly, I do not know.
August 21st. Today, I accompanied Amarok on his first horse ride.
Try to keep up, Amarok, or you'll be swallowed up in the mist.
I turned and saw that he had reined into the crossroads, with his face so drained of blood as to resemble a cadaver.
What is it, Amarok?
Amarok is afraid.
I rode back and followed his terrified stare up to a gibbet, in whose iron ribs there sagged a corpse whose eyes and liver had been devoured by carrion crows.
It is a man.
Was a man? Well, you never get your tenses right.
Who do this bad thing?
He was a bad, bad man.
What did he do, kill a man?
Kill sheep.
Sheep?
You know the word. Sheep.
Sheep kill man.
No, man kill man.
Why, Alistair?
It was not his sheep, Anorak. Sheep belong to other men.
But many sheep, Alistair. Sheep for many men. Meat for many men.
The more I tried to explain, the less I understood. And when, finally, my stream of words ran dry, he looked at me as though I were the most pitiable creature on the face of the earth.
Faster, my Pegasus, faster! Whoa, Pegasus, whoa! What's the meaning of this? I took you for a highwayman.
And had I been, you'd even now be at my mercy.
You do wrong to alarm me, Henry.
And you do wrong to ride without Roberts at your side.
I grew weary of his company and outstripped him an hour ago. Besides, I'm no longer a child in need of a nursemaid.
You're a reckless woman, Margot Fraser.
And if my feelings reckless of them, what prey is yours?
Intolerance.
You're not a man who makes a habit of apologizing, Henry, if indeed it is an apology.
I assure you it is. I behaved abominably at the lock.
Are you speaking for reasons other than self-interest?
Self-interest no longer paramount, although it's self-interest I serve.
But you're talking in riddles. Speak plainly.
You? You must know that you are the most comely maiden hereabouts.
Only hereabouts? Meaning that if I were to enter Edinburgh society, I'd be just another plain Jane from the provinces.
Margot, plain? On the contrary. Wherever you grace company with your presence, people would say, there's the brightest star in the firmament.
Indeed. Listen.
I hear nothing.
Quiet.
Oh, I hear it plainly now. Perhaps a forester's cutting fuel for the winter.
Axes have a sharper bite.
A stag, then?
Even a stag in rut wouldn't bark so monotonously.
Then I'll escort you safely to the lodge.
Not before I discover it. Start!
Margot!
Follow me, Henry! Follow!
There's madness in her. Get up there! Get up!
With our faces whipped red by branches, we arrived in a clearing under an unfamiliar bluff overlooking the loch, and it was from this crag's summit that the sound emanated.
It's far too steep.
Then we'll tether our horses and climb on foot.
It's most unwise.
Oh, I'm weary of your wisdom, Henry. Follow me or retreat. The choice is yours, provided, of course, that you believe in free will. Scrambling like ants through heather and over boulders, we achieved a small plateau purpled with thistles, where we found a crude hut framed by birch boughs and roofed with deer pelts.
See the skins, Marco. They must be poachers. We must go back.
No poacher would claim his presence thus. No, Henry. I think it's far more likely that we've stumbled upon a hobgoblin's lair or a witch's den.
As I half expected in my heart, we found Amarok. Sitting cross-legged on the lip of a precipice, he was striking a hollow log with the spindly leg bones of a deer.
It is unholy.
Because he drums like a croft at a ceilidh?
Because he does not.
Amarok, it is me, Margot. Do you not know me? How strange. It's as if he were fast asleep, but with his eyes wide open.
I've witnessed such occurrences in the past.
Where?
In those possessed by the devil.
But see how pretty this place is. His hut resembles the bars I used to make when I was a child.
Amarok is no child.
Oh, but he is in many ways, Henry. Besides, why shouldn't he have somewhere to escape to when the deadly routine of our household begins to pall?
Were he a brigand planning a fortress, he couldn't have found a finer site.
I believe his motive less sinister, Henry. The guards, the view of the lake. And there, on the horizon. Is that not smoke rising from the chimneys of Inverness?
I grant you it's a pleasant spot. Or rather would be devoid of this incessant din.
It may seem as pleasing to his ears as a tabard does to ours. Help me! My wound's missing.
What should I do?
You must squeeze the child from me or I'll die. Quickly or I'll burst. Harder! Tighter! Look and tell me what you see.
How can a man see what his wife squawks like a gull and wobbles like a walrus?
Head or feet?
Head.
Head is best. You must pull it out of me.
I'll try.
No, you must succeed. Spit on your hands. Useless man who can't even spit to save his wife and child. Here, I'll lick your hands. Now do it quickly. And make sure you don't cut its face with your nails.
Well, you must push again. Again? His head.
It's a boy.
How can I tell from his head?
Turn his shoulders and pull.
There. Again.
A boy.
Two girls have red kidneys and a horn between their legs.
Will he live?
Go, live. He'll live forever. Marco. And Henry.
We heard you drumming and we...
Margot is smiling. Why is Henry not smiling?
Henry's far too clever to smile.
Then Amarok must be a fool for smiling.
You may be many things, my friend, but a fool is not one of them.
I'm your friend.
Of course.
And are you my friend?
What else?
You have horses.
Oh, yes, of course.
But Amarok reached the lodge first.
But you have no horse.
Amarok, run.
Two legs outpace four. Impossible.
Amarok sprang to his feet and rushed headlong through the thistles. And when Henry and I eventually reached the stable yard, there he was, stripped to the waist, sponging himself at the trough with a fistful of straw.
Who's there? Who is it?
Marco.
Amarok. You must leave. Now.
Today, Marco called me a friend.
Go. Immediately, or I'll summon father.
I have made you a gift.
You must tell the court what occurred next.
His face
was a ghostly blue in the moonlight.
You must speak up.
He reached across the coverlet and handed me a carving fashioned from a bone.
Describe it.
Must I?
You must have courage.
It was a wolf lying upon a woman.
Margot, like.
No, Margot, not like. I'm a gold.
Like Zico, when I took her from her father, Zico.
Father! Father!
Margot, why?
Mother, not why?
Amarok, run! Margot, life!
No! No!
And this, good gentlemen of the jury, is the very abomination he gave her.
Margot, you must be brave. Your ordeal is almost at an end.
Describe what happened next.
He hoisted me like a sack over his shoulders and carried me out into the garden while I screamed for my father.
And?
He stopped briefly by the fountain. And I saw a candle flame passing in and out of sight between the windows of the gallery leading to my room.
He's taken her. Taken my Margot. Roberts! Roberts! He's stolen my darling girl.
Oh.
Amarok, of course.
How can you be sure?
Look, damn you! Look at this obscenity.
I'll search the house.
It's too late, too late. They're already gone. Quickly, tell the groom to ride to Inverness. My horse is swiftest. Tell him to inform the garrison commander that my daughter's been abducted. And send someone to rouse the Mackies. Provide them with torches. I want them found, and quickly.
Yes, sir.
And you may arm the Mackies. If they find him, let us show him no mercy.
Oh, why, Amarok, why? I'm your friend.
Yes, Amarok and Margot, friends.
It's not too late. Take me back to the house.
We go to Amarok's house.
Amarok's house there, at the lodge.
No, Amarok's house in the forest.
Alistair will be very angry with you.
Because, father, angry with Amarok, father always angry when daughter becomes wife.
I am not your wife.
Good. Margot, angry like Sico. Come.
No!
Come.
And then?
We walked through the forest until we came to the shelter he'd built for himself on the crag.
And?
I saw the reflections of torch flames in the loch where the Mackies were searching for me.
And?
And there I remained until you, Mr. Croker, and the English sergeant found me at dawn.
Do you see him, Mr. Croker?
No, sir.
Do you, Sergeant?
No, sir.
There. There's the bastard in the blacken.
Oh, I see him now.
Why, sir? He's building bollocks. Can you see the lady?
No, sir. Perhaps she's in the hut or fallen from the cliff.
Sergeant, you're to shoot him without compunction should he resist.
It'll be my pleasure, sir. This time I'll remove more than an ear.
He spotted us. He's smiling. He's actually smiling.
Henry! You have come to see us. Thank you.
He's in my sight, sir.
Hold your fire.
Wells! Margot!
Margot is sleeping. Margot is very tired.
You sure she's still alive?
I know you. You are the bad man who hurt him, huh?
Take him! Hold him down!
Just say the word and I'll cut his throat!
Why, Henry, why?
Margot! Margot!
Henry? I'm here, in the bar.
Have no fear. I'm with armed men. Come to us.
I cannot.
Are you injured?
I am not clothed.
Margot is Amarok's wife.
Look, sir. He's stopped his grinning now.
Margot, stay with him.
Take an ankle each.
Upend him. Hold his legs apart. Wait.
This animal will defile no more.
Sergeant, give me your sword.
If he survives, then what I'm about to do occurred when he was struggling to escape. You understand?
I do.
And you, Croker?
Yes, sir.
Now, hold him firmly.
Have you found her?
Yes. Where I thought to.
Thank God. And she's unscathed.
She's not harmed in any outward manner.
Meaning?
It's my most bitter duty to report that she's no longer intact.
Oh, no! Not my Margot! Not my poor, sweet Margot! It's horrible! Horrible!
Most horrible.
Where is she? I must go to her.
I must advise you to wait, sir. Mrs. Breen's with her now, trying to remove... trying to prevent... Oh, my God, sir, if she were to conceive a child!
And where's her violator?
I've ordered the soldiers to escort her to Inverness. Although I doubt he'll survive the journey. He lost a lot of blood while resisting arrest.
Then you must arrange a physician to attend him.
But why?
Because I want to see him hanged.
I warned you. I said he was an emissary of the devil.
Do not fling salt in my wounds.
You'll engage me to prosecute.
Yes, Henry. Yes.
We'll not see him hanged. We'll smell him burn. I've got all the evidence I need to bring a charge of witchcraft. The talismans. His unnatural ability to remain submersed without drowning. You're my witness.
Yes, Henry, yes.
And is he not left-handed?
He is. And then there is this. He made this indecency.
A dog copulating with a woman?
No, Henry. Amarok and Margot.
Court would admit such an interpretation.
Did I neglect to tell you, Henry? Amarok is their word for wolf.
Then we have him.
I'm in your debt, sir.
It is my duty, sir. No more. Your wolf is already ashes.
Margot? Margot?
Father.
Oh, my princess. Oh, my princess.
I'm no princess, Father. Merely an unmarriageable daughter.
You'll always be my princess.
Leave me, Father. For I have wish of no man's company.
Oh. I'll not allow it, Henry.
But it's a sentence of the court.
And referring to his attire. See to it that he's dressed as a gentleman.
If I might be permitted...
See to do it. I will pay for his dignity.
As you wish.
Amarok. Is this truly my Amarok? I see. Where is he fettered?
I am this customary for those accused of the black arts.
I doubt if it even stand. Amarok, can you hear me? It's Alistair.
Alistair.
I've come to say farewell.
Farewell. Goodbye. Alistair, go?
No. Alistair, not go.
Amarok, go?
Henry, doesn't he know what's to befall him?
Perhaps it's more lenient that he does not.
Wife? Alistair, where is wife?
Dare you persist in calling your daughter wife?
Silence, Henry. Do you not understand that it's imperative for the sake of both of our consciences for him to know that Margot is not his wife?
Otherwise, we'd be nothing but conspirators in his murder.
You will do me an injustice, sir, and yourself.
Leave us.
Leave you alone with us.
Leave us, I say. I have private words to impart.
If you insist, sir. Although I'll remain outside in case of mischief.
Amarok. Oh, Amarok. How has it come to this? I took you in. I fed and clothed you. I gave you my affection as though you were my son. I thought to share with you all my knowledge. You were to be my exemplar. The living evidence that a man raised in innocence could shine like the sun upon this desolate world of ours. With you at my side, I was going to demonstrate to Henry and all his kind that a man with no knowledge of original sin could act as though such a thing could not exist. But you failed me. And you have destroyed me. But I can no longer look upon my fellows with hope in my heart. I am a dead man. Listen.
I hear nothing.
Listen, Alastair. It is the season of the birds flying south. Soon the snow comes.
No, Amarok. Soon come the flames.
Flames? That is good for I am cold, Alastair. So cold.
In mercy's name, Henry, order the executioner to strangle him before the flames consume him alive.
It's too late, sir. The fire's already taken hold of the tower. Besides, it's but a transition between earthly fire and the eternal flames of hell.
He's so still, so silent. Why doesn't he cry out in anger or in pain?
Can you hear my drumming, Siko?
I can.
Aren't I the best?
You've yet to lose a contest.
Where's little Tuk-Tuk?
Waiting for you.
I can't see him.
There, beyond the smoke.
Now I see him there, on the ice. Soon I'll be able to hug him. Soon I'll lie with you again.
But you've got two wives now.
She's abandoned me.
I always thought she was too skinny. A woman's ribs should be hidden. I was always the fattest and the best.
I'm nearly free, Siko.
Look, sir.
I cannot bear to.
You must. He's holding his arms outstretched, although they're burning like logs. And he's laughing, sir. He's laughing.
Today I rode to the crag which I climbed until I stood in the ashes of Amarok's bar, which Henry had put to the torch. Tiny tendrils of moss were already growing there. And when I looked out across the loch towards Inverness, I saw a black cloud of smoke rising into the blue sky, staining the sun with our shame.
In Amarok by Peter Francis Brown, Margot was played by Juliet Prue. Fraser by Ian Cuthbertson, Henry by David Bannerman, and Amarok by Bill Wallace. Seiko was Ingrid Wiseman. Croker, Bob Doherty. Roberts, John Church. Mrs. Cotterill, Phyllida Nash. And McGill, James Telfer. Amarok was directed in Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.